This is the Sexual Inclusion Network. With your host, Christiane Bella. Sin is in.
Greetings and salutations. Good evening, people of the world. Join hands and sing a song. It is the Sexual Inclusion Network. I am Christiane Bella. And joining me here tonight is I just don't know that there are words. I feel like this woman needs an interpretive dance introduction. She is the marvelous, the stylist, the sparkling, and the all-around just Patsy Climax. Hello, Miss Patsy. Are you with us? I clicked your button. That should mean you can hear me and we could be talking. Are you there? Are you there, Patsy? All right. Well, let's see. This, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone of all genders, is the reason why we are switching on September 25th to Voice America. That's where you will find us soon enough, because fucking tech difficulties on this air. Bullshit. Okay. So anyways, I am going to chat with you while we wait to see if we can get the tech issues out of the way and get Miss Patsy Climax on here. And we can give it a go. But I have had a pretty fabulous week. My mom is here visiting. And she has been such a sport. I did a photo shoot today outside some murals and stuff and did some video things. And the final shots were me like lying on my bed in lingerie surrounded by dildos and condoms and butt plugs and stuff. So my mom was a great sport about that. And the picture, I'm super excited. So if you aren't already, please follow us on the socials. You know how that rolls. We are on Instagram at intimacy_architect. We are on the Twitter at intimacytech. And and on the Facebook as intimacyarchitecture. So there you have it. All right. So we're going to see if Patsy can please hang up and try. That's what you got to do, folks. You just got to try again. Try the best we ever can. I met Miss Patsy. Here we go. Come on, baby. Come on. Give it to Mama. Give it to Mama. Connect magical things in the sky. Hello. Son of a bitch. Why is it not working? You know what? I'm just going to tell her to call in as a guest. Go ahead and just call us at 319-527-6205. Patsy, can you hear me now? Okay, I'm just giving you the call-in number, and you'll just call in like a guest, and hopefully that will do it on guest mode, baby. I'm reading you guys the speak to text because it's hard to multitask right now. But yes, so once again, this is actually our last show here on Blog Talk Network. And then we will be returning to the waves of air with the amazing Voice America. And so we will be on Voice America Intimacy Architecture Radio. And let's see. Ah, here we go. Are we boogieing now?
We are boogieing.
Yes. Oh, thank you. All the people of the world, this is the one, the only, the sparkling and marvelous Patsy Climax. Thank you for jumping through all the hoops so that we could have you here with us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, I
mostly just don't know how to push buttons.
It's, you know what? It's actually, I was just telling our listeners, it's the reason why I'm leaving Blog Talk Network and moving to Voice America, because their tech shit on here sucks.
So, well, I'm glad I'm not the only person.
No, you're like the fourth guest I've tried to have on that, like, could not get this shit to work. So, thank God it's a call-in reunion. And so at least you can always call in as a guest, which you are. You are such a guest of not only the show, but my heart. I remember the very first time I saw you, and I was just like, oh my God, it's everything. It's like, I grew up in New York, as I know you live in, you know, on Broadway. And so it was, you were just all of the things. You were like the like Patti LuPone and the like Dita Von Teese and the Lucille Ball. And I'm like, how can she be so funny and so sexy and so smart all at once? This woman. So tell us.
I like that. I like being like Lucille Ball, especially. I'm very into that comparison. Just ridiculousness.
Yes, that's such a piece. And actually, let's just jump into that. What about comedy is sexy? And like, how do you, you know, mix that so well? Because I think people have this misconception of like, I don't know. I think that women aren't funny, for one, which is bullshit.
Right. Yeah,
and that, like, being silly is somehow, you know, not hot. And I'm like, no, you clearly are hanging out with the wrong person.
Well, right. You could even see it in like the way we partner up with people. A lot of the times you'll see like who are traditionally very, you know, beautiful, quote unquote, people always end up with someone funny. Like, the most desirable among us, you desire funny, because, you know, you're not going to age out of funny. You're not going to, you know, and it all, you know, and it also means you can tell when someone is funny, that they're going to be usually, not always, but usually that they're going to be fun to be around at the very least. So you're not going to be bored when someone's funny. So I think kind of our primal instincts are like, this person is fun. Like, we've evolved to a place where like, oh, fun is now one of the things we look for, you know, in a potential mate. So that's always been, it's very like heady. Everything I do, as silly and ridiculous as all of my stuff is, I am a very like, you know, heady person. I like to, everything is very meticulous, you know, and that's why it can be so like over the top and stupid, because it's so meticulous that I know exactly the dumb thing that I'm going to do. And I think that's what makes it like entertaining, but also attractive, because you know that I'm going to, you know, you're not afraid that I'm not going to make it through the number. You know, I try to at least appear competent. But yeah, I don't know why people find or don't find being funny sexy. I have always thought being funny is very sexy. I base my opinions on people much more so off of like fun, like how funny they are, how witty they are, especially before I like even look at them or their sense of style or whatever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because like you said, like, you know, you could be, you know, I think about, you know, in a museum, yes, I love to look at the paintings and it's beautiful, but ultimately the experience is having somebody there to share banter with, you know, and to have that kind of like tennis match. When somebody's funny and like you said, like that kind of like witty, clever, like that could be a really fun, spicy game that I feel that in my loins. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, you would make good baby.
Yeah. And yeah, because that's what, I mean, burlesque at the very heart of it is arousal, is like teasing someone and whatever your like want to, like, what do you want the audience to feel? And, you know, burlesque, very often it is aroused or excited or tantalized. But I think and specifically in burlesque, it's always done, I don't remember who said this to me, but someone quoted someone, like, burlesque is always done with a wink and a smile. Like, it's never, burlesque is very rarely completely serious. Even the most like emotional, heart-wrenching numbers have a little bit of like zing to them, just because of the nature of the beast. Like, it is very you know, self-informed performance, and it's very like, you want the audience to react more so than any other art form I've ever been a part of. You want the audience to react, and I think using comedy, honestly, for me, is the easy way out. I can make people, mm-hmm. I've always known I can make people laugh, but I don't know, I can't do the splits, I can't kick my foot over my head, but if I can make them laugh while I'm getting naked, then we've got something going on.
I love that. And I think, you know, sex is funny. Like, sex is, like, sometimes the most, like, awkward, like, you know, sloppy, kind of, like, goofy, you know, especially if you're in a long-term intimate relationship. Like, I mean, you're talking, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're laughing because, like, someone farted or, like, you know, it's like, hang on, I can't come, I have to pee. Like, you know, it's, like, like, a lot of funny moments. So, yeah, this, you know, this way to kind of meet people in this place of, like, excitement, like you said, it's all excitement. So, you know, is the excitement coming because you're titillated? Is the excitement coming because you're laughing? And it's all one and the same, really. I was thinking the other day about how the motions we make when we laugh are so similar to what we make when we cry. It's just that sensation, you know, moving. But, yeah. So I love that you go into
That's a very, like, acting. I remember in acting school, that's one of the things, the exercises they make you do is, like, very quickly switch back and forth between laughing and crying to, like, show you that it's all in the breath. And really any excited state is just connected to how fast are you breathing. And so that was, like, a fun study. And I think that might tie into it there, because when you're laughing, you're so close to that, like, overwhelmed, like, uncontrollable emotion, and that's, I don't know, maybe that's part of the reason it catches you off guard, and so you're excited about it. I could do a whole, like, TED talk on the science of comedy, like, because I think it can be refined, and, you know, almost, you can tear comedy apart as much as you can tear apart, like, Shakespeare, and that's something that, because it's silly and it's funny, and you laugh, and then you forget about it, but I think it's fun to kind of, like, pick it apart. But then that's what's sexy to me, is, like, the picking apart of all of this. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to practice this 100 times, and I'm still very excited about it. That means we've got something.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Like, if it still titillates you, to me, the sign of a good experience, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, watching beautiful people take their clothes off or something that made me laugh, or getting both at the same time, which is why I love burlesque, is, like, if later, like, I'm, you know, I'm, like, putting groceries away or some shit, and I, like, I laugh about it again. Like, I love that. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, it was funny in the moment, but you let it simmer, and you kind of come back to it, and you're like, oh, my God, that was just hilarious. Like, you just, I love those moments when I'm like, oh, that's good stuff. Like,
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why we can hear, like, the same joke over and over again, and it still be, you know, I love that stuff. It makes me very excited.
So who was one of your biggest, I would say, both comedy influences and burlesque influences?
I would say so. I started off, like, straight up performing, thinking I was going to be some, like, highfalutin, actress. So I started out watching people like Deborah Monk, who is, like, a very brassy musical theater babe. But from like several years ago, she's an older lady now who is still, like, better at Broadway than anyone. You know, the Patti LuPone, because I love that kind of humor, the kind of tongue in cheek, like, you know, Mae West, very that, like, it's dirty because it's, like, you don't know that it's dirty. I love those ladies. Any of, like, the very brassy, like, Broadway women. And, of course, those, like, Lucille Ball is, like, the standard that any television comedy should be, like, put up against. Not even just necessarily female comedy.
Right. If you're going to learn timing from anyone, like, Lucille Ball was, like, the queen of timing. So I think that's...
Yes, and it was, like, so theatrical how she did it. Mm-hmm. She's just, I mean, one of my, I can't remember the movie that it is, but it's when Lucille Ball wears this, like, beautiful, like, pink ostrich feather gown, and there's all these cats, like, dancing around her. Like, just, like, how much range Lucille Ball had was incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, but that's a whole other thing I can give a TED talk about, is how much I love Lucille Ball. But, so that's, like, in, like, the acting comedy spectrum. And then I didn't, like, I was aware of burlesque, and I was aware of, like, performance art that included getting naked, especially because in New York, that's, like, a lot of the performance art. But it wasn't until I came to Nashville and kind of the scene, the burlesque scene in Nashville is like very on the surface. And so I got very quickly, very deep into it. And that's when I started being really interested in burlesque. And so a lot of my influences are people who are still performing, which has been very different from my experience studying actor. So that's been really cool. So I really like, Blanche DeBrie is like the person who I want to be when I grow up. She is a performer, I believe, based in Las Vegas, and she MCs quite a bit. So she hosts shows, and she MC'd me at a festival I was at, and I like died like every moment she was saying words about me, like my little, when she was saying my little intro and she said my name, like I was just, like, dying backstage. And she's very heavy on the comedy. Like, you can tell, like, she's a musical theater gal. You know, people like Dirty Martini, like, that's really, for me, is the standard. Because she's very theatrical. Her costuming is very theatrical. She wears the cute, like, big blonde hair, which I think is so glamorous. And then people, like, I meet at festivals who are, you know, not big, and people who are really experimenting with the art form, I found a lot of inspiration in, especially with doing, like, not super classic burlesque. Like, when you Google burlesque, what comes up is not what I do. And so I, you know, had to find inspiration with the other weirdos, a lot of whom are very closely tied to, like, drag and, like, queer performance art. So that's been really fun to marry, you know, the world that, like, what you see, like, Dita Von Teese on stage, obviously, is, like, the most glamorous thing that's ever walked the earth. But then, like, marrying that and, like, the very thick history of burlesque with what's happening now, which is now, like, burlesque is more and more being occupied by different kinds of people, and so it's becoming such, like, a rich art form, and it's so cool. So it's been neat to, like, meet my new influences and kind of like grow and create a community with them. So that's like the best, one of the best things about burlesque is how much of a like community feeling you get in it. I mean, cause you watch each other get naked like the first time you meet. So you very much like, I know you, I like you. You know, I like how you get naked.
No, for sure. And I mean, your shows are some of the most phenomenal. And the last one I got to see where you did like a take on pose and you did the ball style thing, because, you know, like that is kind of like the epitome of this, you know, this idea of sort of like no holds barred place of being your truest self and in all your glory. And it was just like the cream of the crop of Nashville. And I think even people in from like other cities, just, you know,
yeah,
so
yeah, we had some people down in Georgia come up. That was crazy. Yeah, and that's the show that I did last year that people have most asked me about. Obviously, we're not doing it right now because we were squeezing like our venue where I hold all the Razor Glam shows. It's supposed to fit like 50 people maybe at like absolute maximum. And the ball last year, we called it the Art Strip Ball, was, I think we almost got like 100 people in there, including the performers. And so, like, there's no way we're going to have to wait a little while for another one of those. But it's really been, that was like my favorite show that I've ever been a part of. And it was a mass idea that I, you know, picked up and talked with different performers. And, you know, because drag was such a part of my upbringing. And that, yeah, like I grew up in Nashville going to play way before I should have been allowed to go to play, like watching drag queens as like a little kid, like very excited about it. And especially in like a red state where that was like the haven, that was like where you went if you were like a weird queer kid. And then moving to New York and then like living in Harlem because that's where you live and like being going to like the balls that are still happening that look like when you watch an episode of like Pose now, the balls look very similar. Like the structure is still, it's like ingrained into the community and it's so cool. And then that world, what we know as like mainstream drag and queer culture and burlesque are all in this big pot together, really, if you think about it. It's, you know, it's all kind of ostracized live entertainment that exists. And so I wanted it to all be together. And I think a lot of the things that drag has that it needs to work on, burlesque has, you know, with the body positivity and like the very inclusive nature of the beast. And then a lot of things that drag has, burlesque needs. And so I think the communities can really work together to create like just one giant, amazing ball of like partially naked, very glamorous people. So that was where the idea came from. And I was like, this is just, we have to do this. So I'm excited to maybe eventually do another one. We might do one virtually. We floated the idea of doing one virtually. We just have to figure out the logistics of that. And so if like the virtual shows that are coming up go well, we'll consider trying to put that beast online, but who knows what'll happen.
And you've been doing a lot of virtual shows. In fact, you have another one coming up on August 28th. So
yes.
How is that? Because, I mean, like you said, so much of it is playing off an audience. It's just be filming in your house. What's been going on for you around, and especially on the production side, you know, of things? Like how are you making the magic happen?
It's been it's very fun and at the same time very frustrating because it is like you wish you had an audience to play off of. You wish, because of how the structure of burlesque shows are and what the tone of them normally is, you feel like you need an audience. But we found that my shows in particular are, we film them and edit them together like a movie and then put them out there in the world and you watch them. We don't have any, like, it's not on Twitch or on, like, Zoom. It's not those, like, where it's actually happening live. And so it's very much like you're completely disconnected from the audience. Everything is done beforehand. And so you have to kind of act. You have to truly, like, I had to really bring out my acting chops to be able to, because you're not pretending that there's an audience there. Because obviously people who are watching at home know there's nobody in their house watching this. So you can't, like, play to the audience. But you have to have that same, like, energy and, you know, quality that draws people in, and it has to feel spontaneous. And that's been really the thing that I've loved playing with, is making through like what we film and what we edit, making the show feel like it's happening live, like you're part of it. And so that's been really fun. And I'm very lucky to live with, my partner is like a professional film editor. So he films all of like the in-between parts, because all of the performers, of course, film their acts or their dance numbers in their own homes or in a studio by themselves. And then they send me the videos, and I then have to compile them together. And then I talk in between all of them like an MC of a show would. And so we at my house and recently at my parents' property out in the boonies, have, you know, filmed MC bits.
Yes.
I got distracted by my dog. And then trying to make it feel like it's a show. And I don't know how successful it's been, because I'm a little biased because I think it's hilarious. But I feel like it's been fairly successful. I'm very lucky that my partner is an editor and films everything for me and edits it together. Because without that, it would be garbage nonsense, I'm pretty sure. Like half of it, truly, over 75 to 85% of the success of the show has been due to Ralph being able to edit them together for us, because his editing is very funny to me. He like makes jokes in editing, and that makes me happy.
I love that. It really is true. Like, you know, they have to marry together. You have these, like, individual, like, shooting a movie where you're like, okay, well, we'll tune into this, you know, with the same. So when it all, you know, even though it's chopped up, we're going to put it together. But it's like, you know, you have, like, very different segments and marry that together. Like, that's a skill set. And you guys also work together on photography, which I love, because I know you know, there is something extra special about having a female photographer there, to just, especially someone has, you know, like the gift that comes with having been on the side and just being able to hold space for that vulnerability. So I'm so excited to see you venturing out, you know, spreading your creative wings even more. And you guys are doing a photo shoot. I don't know if you have any spots left, but it's a like safe, social, the social D.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're doing a, we started yesterday. We did a couple of folks yesterday, and yeah, we had the place where I normally host my live shows very generously offered to let us use it, as a studio, because one, it's large enough for when you have, you know, myself, my partner, and the model there, you can stay pretty safely distant from each other. And they have it all set up. You know, they have the air purifier, and they had, you know, they even have like a like the thermometer, the head thermometer. Like they are set up at the bar or the barbershop theater. So they offered for us to do it there, and that was like our test run. And then tomorrow we are at the House of Bits, which is a local studio space, dance studio space, and she is all, Betsy Bits owns that place, and she has hers all set up, ready to go, covered in hand sanitizer. So I'm excited, because I have it. I mean, when I did photography before, I had no idea what I was doing. I literally like looked it up on the internet, what camera I wanted, and bought it with like my money. I was like literally graduating high school, and did some photography, and I was like naturally inclined to it just because I am a very, I guess, a visual person in general. So I ended up taking pictures that were nice to look at. I have no idea if they were like composed correctly or, you know, if I had my aperture wide enough, but they were like nice to look at. So I kind of fell off of doing photography when I was studying musical theater, just because it wasn't like, I didn't have any place to do, I didn't have any time. And recently I have nothing but time on my hands. And so Ralph graciously agreed to teach me how to do photography. So he showed me some stuff at home, and he's kind of letting me learn by doing. So it's almost like, I am shooting through his eyes, kind of, because I'm just kind of doing exactly what he would do at a shoot, just so I can learn the nuts and bolts of, you know, of the photography side. Because I've modeled a little bit since coming back to Nashville, and so it's nice, it is a nice feeling to know what the person on the other side feels like. And then now being on the photographer's end, I understand a lot more, why photographers do certain things and act certain ways. So I'm excited to work on it more and more. And I realized the hardest part for me is like almost the bedside manner. Cause every time I take a picture, because I'm so enthralled, like I get very enthralled with how beautiful the person looks. I'm just like, yes, yes, work. You're so cute. But I have to like not do that because that terrifies people. But I'm excited. I'm really excited right now. It's all been like studio shoots, so it's very like pared back, really basic, and that's been really nice to hone the nuts and bolts of it. But I'm excited to kind of like find a style again, and do some weird shit, because I know literally I have nothing but time on my hands right now. So it's just like, okay, I'm gonna do a clump of shoots. I'm gonna quarantine for 14 days. I'm gonna do a clump of shoots. Like, we're just gonna do that. Because I'm bored,
yeah.
And I need an artistic outlet, damn it.
I would love to go outside and play with you. I think it would be so fun. I did one today. I went around and found some, like, cool murals, and then finished up with, like, a series on my bed with a bunch of, like, sex toys and stuff. And I was reminded, like, how fucking hard it is to model. You know, like, I'm laying on this bed. The photographer's standing on the bed, so the bed is like smushing. I'm supposed to kind of like arch my back, look like I'm comfortably laying in a puddle of sex toys. you know, look at the camera, and I'm like, you know, when people are like, oh, like he's just like so silly to like pay models and like, you know, like all this crazy. It's like, no, that's just fucking work.
Yeah,
it's to look effortless and like at ease while you're doing all this like shit. So I would love to talk to you. I mean, I've been making notes. I'm like, oh wait, I want to circle around to that. So first off, side thought, I would like to bring back, you know how they used to have like mud fights? Like, I think we should start having like hand sanitizer. Where people,
yes,
like, there's
there
like,
you
like,
go.
Two hot soaps in a puddle of, you know, in a big, like, kiddie pool of hand sanitizer, and they just, like, wrestle.
That's like the basis for like a very fantastic SNL sketch, I think. And I need to write it right now.
Yeah. So,
that's so funny.
Other random thought is, have you seen the Pose episode where Patti LuPone sings?
I think so.
It's
I'm
so
not
good.
Caught up on Pose, so I don't know. But I believe I remember her singing to me. But I remember a lot of her singing to me because I view her singing very frequently because I love her. But I believe I've seen it, and I believe it's fantastic because everything she does is fantastic because she is just the baddest bitch. I love her so much.
Yeah, and then so finally, circling back to photography, is, you know, because I think, too, this burlesque has this burlesque was body positive before body positive was a trend. I think that's like the best.
Yeah.
Before that became a fucking hashtag, like that was burlesque. And so I love not only, you know, that your show is fucking put that with an exclamation point and a fucking bump and grind. But I imagine like the photography as well is, you know, I love that you're a cheerleader. Like, you know, you as you are, you know, here is just like, everybody is like, you know, just that magic and like, yes, show your magic. So,
yeah,
tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that, you know.
It's one of those things to me that I didn't realize needed to be, like, I didn't realize that we needed a hashtag until,
right,
you know, you start getting yourself out in the public and then it's like, oh, why? Okay, well, I'm going to have to make a hashtag then. So, and burlesque, I think because it is truly you are naked in front of people, it has to be because people aren't perfect looking ever. Like, you can, the most perfect person in the world is not perfect. So you have to have that confidence, positivity, and then that leads to people being accepted for who they are. And there, I mean, like anything, there is a ways to go for, you know, burlesque scenes and certain burlesque shows not having, you know, welcoming attitudes to everyone. But as a whole, the community is just amazing. And it's not, because it's not hard to be. It's honestly harder to not be body positive and to accept people because every shape, size, color, religion, whatever is good at the thing. So just do it. Just let the people do it. And I think, yeah, and it carries over to any part of my life because once you, I guess the Kool-Aid of the body positivity movement that you have to drink is that it just doesn't affect someone's worth and how good they are at something, what they look like. Something they can't change in the next 10 seconds mm-hmm. does not, you know, change
right.
how valuable they are as a performer, as a human being. And yeah, I think that we all just have to be reminded sometimes. I definitely do, especially, and everybody is very ruffled up right now, you know, because people are gaining weight because they're in quarantine and people are kind of having to, it's been refreshing and frustrating watching the progression of people's acceptance of their own body changes because they've been stuck in the house for so long. And I think on the other end of it, we might have a couple more people on the side of body positivity because they're having to be confident in themselves in a way that they didn't think they were going to have to be. And so then it's like, oh, this has happened to me and I'm still a good person and worthy and things. So other people must be also. And that's, and it just like, you just have to remind self and everyone every day, all the time that it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think, getting your picture taken, feeling your absolute best is a really nice way of finding that because it's like, oh, I feel good. I am this person and I feel good. This person made me feel good. Everything
mm-hmm.
is good. It's very like lovey-dovey, touchy-feely. But
and sometimes we need someone else to see that beauty in us and remind us like, yeah, no, that is your truth. Like your body is beautiful just as you are. I had my realization today at the photo shoot. I grabbed stuff. I didn't try it on beforehand. I was like, there are dresses in my closet. I fit in dresses in my closet. And we get there and I'm like changing and putting on stuff in the car. And I like couldn't really zip it up this one purple dress, and I was like, all right, maybe like the photographer can. And he's like, yeah, that. And I was like, well, I guess, you know, then we're, you know, we're improvising now. We're going to like pretend that I'm unzipping the dress. And then, and we ended up doing this whole thing where like I put another dress on as I was taking that dress off. But yeah, I definitely had a moment. I was like, well, you know, here we are. Yeah. Like we haven't left the house, you know, much. It hasn't been like no gym, you know, stress eating. And I was like, all right, you know, this is my body now. My body just doesn't happen to fit in this one dress. And just, yeah, being able to just be like, that's okay. Like, that's not, you know, that doesn't change my worthiness. And yeah, I feel
and
like.
It's so funny that it's a radical idea.
Yeah.
I think it's so kind of backwards that we're having to remind people that. But I'm glad that it's something that is catching on in a way. And it's almost become, and I hate to say, but it's like trendy in a way, because you're getting more like plus size models and things. You're getting more normal human looking people on TV and in movies. You know, there's a huge movement to not edit photos as much. And that's been awesome to see, because it's like, no, we are human beings, and we all are kind of in this mess together. So it's okay. You know, it's okay that you don't look perfect. It's good. It's good things. Because you're never gonna reach that like unattainable goal, and like, and you can talk for hours and hours about how the diet industry has like created what we need to look like so that they can take our money, you know. But it's like, no, just do what makes you feel good. It's not, you know, you're gonna have a better time if you just do what makes you feel good instead of like beating yourself up about something that you can't do a ton about at the, you know, especially at the time. Like I can't drop 20 pounds before tomorrow. That's not gonna happen. So I will be the sharking tomorrow.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, I don't own a scale, and that's how I honestly had no idea that I gained weight, because I don't weigh myself. Like, I know when my body is feeling healthy, and I know when my body is not, because thin does not equate healthy, and overweight mm-hmm. or fat, whatever, you know, term you feel most comfortable with, people out there, does not equate unhealthy, you know? So it's like,
right.
It's really listening to not listen to body mass index, you know, like shit that like been like made up to
right and
crush your
and
body.
People start in a different playing field too, so it's mm-hmm. not like, because mm-hmm. and even if I am like, I, you know, you don't see other unhealthy behaviors demonized, you know. I can, it's equal, you know. I'm trying to put my words together. You when other things about you are unhealthy, those things shouldn't be demonized. So why is it like mm-hmm.
Right.
If one specific part of your health journey is the thing that makes you worthy or not. It's like, no, like I could be healthier now at a heavier weight than I was before, or I could not be. It's a range.
Right.
It's a whole thing. Everybody's on this, is on a different timeline with their health journey. And some people are never completely healthy because they have chronic illness and they can't do anything about that. So it doesn't, that doesn't even equate your worth, how healthy you are. So it's a whole, you know, a whole bundle bouquet of issues that it's all just like, just be a person, be who you are in this moment. You can't do anything about it.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. Let your own self be true. So talking about the difference between emceeing, and I don't want to say and performing, because emceeing is performing, but versus maybe being in someone else's show, because I know you tour and you're in a lot of other events. In fact, that's the joy of one of the reasons why I know you is I had the pleasure of working with you and so I was producing. But yeah, I mean, there must be a shift from being on in that way, in the like showgirl way versus the MC.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
So they both, doing both has made me better at the other. So as I started emceeing more, it made me, I feel, perform to a higher caliber when I was doing the showgirl thing. Because the tools are similar, but you're using them in a different way. So it is, you know, when you're an MC, you get more spontaneity because you're working with the crowd. You're talking to the crowd. You have a list of things you have to say, but a lot of it is just shit you're pulling out of your ass because someone in the back row is wearing a really funny hat and you have to talk about it. And so you can kind of take that feeling of spontaneity, and in your performing of acts or like numbers, it you have to have that same feeling, but obviously you can't in the middle of your number stop and talk about the funny hat in the back of the room. So it's different, but very similar. I enjoy doing both equally. Definitely. I really like, it's been fun as I've been, as I'm being booked as an MC in shows that are not mine. So when I produce all the Razor Glam shows, so I do all of the stuff with Ralph, who does like a lot of the heavy lifting and like the tech stuff. And then I MC the show. So I am very intertwined with the show. I know everything that's going on, you know, all the nuts and bolts. And so it feels very fluid. When you MC a show that isn't yours, that you're not behind the scenes of, it's so weird. Because it's kind of like you're having to be the face of this thing that doesn't belong to you. And so right. when something goes wrong, you have to own that thing. And it's fun, but it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really interesting to kind of transition into getting booked more as an MC, because that's what I am starting to be known for, just because I got a loud mouth. And then the performing is very, like, I'm super meticulous about both. Like, I make very detailed lists of everything I have to talk about when I'm an MC. And then when I am doing a number, I am super particular about the jokes. This, you know, bump has to hit right on this lyric that I'm singing, or otherwise it's not going to make any sense. I'm going to make this exact dumb face on this line because it's funny. I'm going to shake my mouth around on this moment because this is funny. Like, so it's very meticulous, and as is the MCing. So they're kind of like, we're crawling up the same hill made out of glitter. and it's fun to go back and forth. The one thing that I say hate doing, but that is like running a marathon, is if you ever have to MC the whole show and do a number
right.
in it. And I honestly don't know how many times I've done it. There's one time in particular that sticks out in my head, because it wasn't a huge show, but the audience was very rowdy. And so I was, by the time I got to my number, I was so exhausted, but it was also very cool because I was the last number in the show and I knew the audience intimately by that point. You know, I knew people's names. I knew where in my number I could go sit down on someone's lap, and it was funny because me and Greg had a banter earlier. We had a moment. He bought me a drink. I'm going to go sit on him. So that's very, that's really fun, but it is truly, of the things in my burlesque journey that I've done, one of the more difficult. So, but I would recommend it to anyone who does both things. Try it. It's fun.
I feel like I like the freedom of performing with the showgirl moment. Like, the show doesn't feel like it rides on me as much when I've been in MC mode, and then I feel this pressure of like the show must come, and like I have to help keep that train on that track. it's interesting. I love the spontaneity of it, which is, and that was always my biggest struggle with burlesque, is like, I'm all about the spontaneity. I really have a hard time like doing the diligent rehearsal, like get that, you know, I'm like, we're in the zone, you know, I'm just like, I'm in the moment, and if I just, something comes to me, that's been probably my thing, is finding that balance. And I have such reverence for people who are like, just like you said, this like meticulous, like, you know, just spot on. I'm just like, oh my god, I know you worked for like, you know, countless hours behind the scenes to make that happen. I absolutely love it, and it's just so beautiful to watch it all unfold around you. So let's talk a little bit. We have like about 10 minutes left. Let's talk about, you know, I mean, you journeyed, you've been so many places. The rules are different everywhere, and I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, you know, you're talking about like, what do we do with time on our hands? I've been thinking about like the time on my hands, how can I free nipples? The crusade of nipples. Nipples on Facebook, nipples in burlesque in all cities nationwide, worldwide. Let's just, you know, talk about the hypocrisy of why how damning and evil it's been. And yet, you know, men's nipples are not. And bullshit
it's
blue
so
laws.
Strange. Right. Like, well, every city, every state kind of has different blue laws, which are the laws that, like, tell you how much good you can show, specifically where in a place it serves alcohol, because for some reason the cocktail of alcohol and a nipple will lead to sin that will send you to hell. But only that combination. Alcohol by itself is fine, and a nipple by itself is fine, at least in a bar. But if you put those two things together, straight to hell, do not pass go, do not collect $200. And so it's been weird traveling, like, how contrived all of the blue laws are. So I think it was, like, in Cleveland, Ohio, I went and I did a show, and their blue laws are a little less strict, but it's really hardcore. So it's like, if your pasty falls off, the venue will be fined. So everybody, like, super glues their pasties on, and they're like, if you accidentally, like, if your bottoms come off in the wrong way, the venue will be fined. So everybody wears safety panties under their underwear, under their, like, pretty rhinestone underwear. All the performers I know in Ohio wear, like, nude safety panties, because if there's something breaks on their underwear that falls off, they won't be, like, liable or whatever. Right. That was crazy to me. Wow. And then, of course, Nashville, who I think has one of the – or Tennessee in general has some of the stricter blue laws and the more random. The underside of your boob, obviously the nipple, because God forbid, the pubic area. And then not only you can't show, like, your butt, but, like, the 3 inches on the side of your butt crack. Like, what is it? Why is it 3 inches? Like, I want to know. Like, I want to know at the beginning of this conversation was, like, why specifically the vortex? But it doesn't make sense, and it's not like a super old law, because it used to be like even stricter, and so they pulled back, and now you're lucky, you get to show the top part of your boob, but not the under part. And it's fucking nuts, and they're so dumb about it. Like, they fine you, like, it doesn't really do anything. Like, it's obvious that all they care about is, I don't even fully know what they're trying to stop now that I'm thinking about it, because it not only, like, it's more difficult for performers, and Nashville specifically is a place where a lot of, like, bachelorette parties come and want to see naked people, so, like, you're losing out on money to begin with, because you're losing that entire, like, stripper industry, you know, because, like strip clubs in Nashville, like old tried and true pole dance and strip clubs do not serve alcohol. You have to bring your own alcohol. And, like, how is the Better Business Bureau not been, like, yo, we can make so much coin if we can do bottle service in these strip clubs for these hillbillies? So I don't understand. Like, even if you're just, like, very much on the most practical, like, money level, so, like, the level that these people who make these laws understand, like, money, you'll make more money. But I think it's just, like, the very puritanical nature of not only the South, but, like, I think Tennessee specifically, because we're at this crossroads of the North and the South, and Nashville was always, like, a place that people came through, and it was known as being very dirty. And when they cleaned it up, I think they lost a lot of, I mean, not only did they lose a lot of the soul of Nashville, and we're watching that still happen, but they lost, like, some of the fun parts of the griminess. Like, strip clubs are fun. Like, why you gotta be a jerk about it? Like, let people do what they want to do. And it's not saving anyone from anything. No one in there's a kid. Like, you're not, these are full adult people you are telling can't show their body parts to other full adult people who want to pay them money.
Right. That you get a cut of.
I don't understand. You're right. That you get some of. You can have some of this money. Like, I don't understand. And we were working on, in the before times, one of the main goals of the live shows this year was to have the before times, yes. Was having a petition to try to start a conversation with the ABC board in Nashville about the blue laws. But right now, that's not going to happen. So we're going to wait on that also. But that was one of the things we wanted to work on, because it's so stupid. And even though it's very, like, we find what people find ways around it. Like, obviously, strip clubs don't serve alcohol. That's how they find a way around it. And it would just, you know, make it just a little easier. We're still, like, no matter what you say, we're going to show our nipples to people. It's just, like, are you going to be able to chart, like, make money off of it or not? So it's like the weed argument. It's like people are going to smoke weed either way. So you might as well tax it and give the money to schools. So you can tax my nipples if you want to. You can give the money to schools.
I don't understand. Well, because you drive things underground, and that's when fucked up shit happens. You know, the minute you drive something underground, start to, is when shady things, you know, because you're leaving no other choice. You're not allowing it to be done in the light of day. You know, I thought about that the other day when someone was telling me about, you know, the biggest problem is, like, credit card companies don't want to take the money from weed companies. I'm like, but they take money from other arboretums and floor. I'm like, what difference does it make if I'm selling plant or that plant? Like, why do you care?
How did a credit card company try to take the moral high ground? Like, that's ridiculous. That's so stupid.
So ironic.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. Like, what is considered bad and good is all topsy-turvy in a lot of the structures and systems of America. And I think, like, the silliest, funniest example of it are the blue laws. Like, obviously, this is not something that is causing a ton of violence towards people. It's not, but it's, like, a stupid example of, like, how much dumb things are controlled for no reason when there's legitimately bad shit going on that they don't make laws about, you know? And it's so, like, you can kind of shine the mirror back in their face with it, like, okay, so you're going to tell me I can't show 3 inches on either side of my butt crack if they're selling alcohol, but you're going to let this, you know, institutionalized racism, fucking sexism, homophobia, transphobia run rampant in your system, but I can't show the underside of my boob? Come on. Come on. Who's got the time? Who's got the time to be looking for underboobs? All
and
that underboobs.
I want to know, is it actually someone's job somewhere in Tennessee to, like, measure the butt crack to make sure it's within the 3?
Well, at some shows, they will. So at the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival, I will never forget, because how strict the blue laws are in Knoxville and how hardcore the ABC board is, every person at the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival had to go flash the stage manager and be like, these are my titties. This is my butt. Is it covered enough? And they have to look closely to make sure. And that's fucking wild. Yeah, that blew my mind. I was like, I'm going to get in trouble here. I am bad at following rules.
That is crazy. Woo! I mean, I got my start in L.A., where I started at a BDSM club in L.A., so I could do whatever the fuck I wanted. I could, like, get naked. You don't even want to know the shit I saw there. it was like pendulum swung way the fuck the other way, and I was like, oh my god, I have to cover my what? And, like, underboob covering is in the ass. Like, pasties is, like, no big deal. It's like, but to, like, cover your underboob and to cover 3 inches of your, like, that is not easy to do.
it's so specific. Like, you can't find the garments you need to do that at a Macy's. You know, we've got people in town, see, that make the specific coverings that are exactly like the 3 inches, and it's Blue Lawless Designs on Etsy. She's top notch, Evelyn Vinyl. But it makes them exactly to the specifications, the underboob and the butt, and so that it's like it's your second skin, and that's something that never comes off, but everything, you know, and it's fantastic. It's well-crafted lingerie, but I'm angry that I have to buy it because it's not, like, I would rather her be able to make whatever she wanted so that you could, you know, buy cool costumes from her and not these, like, because the shape of it is just never, it's not, I want to show you my butt crack. Dang it. It's so stupid. It's all the good. It's like all like the fun, like juicy, jiggly bits they make you cover too. I guess that's why. It's all the fun stuff. Rude.
Yeah, it's like the line. You know, it's like, where is the line leading you? So I guess the line of the butt crack is too dangerous of a place for the naked eye to see it. So we have a couple minutes left, so I want to plug all your things. So people can find all the shows you are producing online on Razor Glam Productions, as well as following you at Pasty Climax. The next show is on August 28th. And what's great about it, too, is, like, you don't even have, like, you get it and you can watch it at your leisure. You know, it's like you said, it's not you, like you're watching it live thing.
Yeah,
so.
It's like a movie, and you can watch it as many times as you want, and you can rewind it and watch it again. You don't have to give it back to Blockbuster. It's amazing.
I love it. And the photography. So, yeah, so if people, you know, are interested in working out, I'm sure you guys will be doing more of these down the road. Like you said, you need an artistic outlet. So, yeah, so if you're looking for an opportunity to get into your body and enjoy and celebrate yourself and be immortalized in all your glorious beauty, yes, Miss Pasty Climax, thank you so much for being here. I mean,
thank you for having me.
It's so good to talk to you. So yeah, we will see you around. We here at Sexual Inclusion Network will be moving now to Fridays at 7 p.m. starting on, I believe it is the 7th of August. I'm looking at my calendar to verify. Yes, that is right. On Friday, August 7th at 7 p.m. See? Oh, that's so easy to remember now. 7 and 7. So that'll be our new time and our new spot as we begin to make our transition to Voice America. Woo! So exciting. Well, I send all my love and snuggly, sparkly thanks your way. And yeah, thank you again for being here, Pasty. Is there anything else you want to close out with as we are wrapping things up?
Everyone, please be safe. So that we can touch each other again, please, please, please. I want to shake my boobies for people again, please. Okay, that's it.
I love it. Yes, for the boobies, everyone. For the boobies.
For the boobies. Do it for the boobies, if nothing else.
That's great. All right, everyone, from here at Sexual Inclusion Network, we are sending you lots of love and healthy blessings. Peace be with you. Bye now.